Welcome to Radio Mojo, brought to you by Pieology Pizza. Pieology, the study of custom pizza. Pieology.com. Now here's your host, Joe McGarry.
Welcome to Radio Mojo. We're doing one of our favorite things of the year. In fact, I'm so looking forward to this podcast that I've traveled all the way to find Roberto Viernes instead of doing it on the phone this year. Roberto, of course, is the general manager of American Wines and Spirits, and we're here to chat a bit about wine. Hello, how are you?
Hi, doing great, Joe. Thank you.
Nice to see you.
Same here.
So we love this, right? We love mm-hmm. the holidays. Everybody does.
Yes.
But I think one of the reasons that it's so fun to talk to you at this time of year is that there are so many opportunities to go out and try new things and mm-hmm. new tastes. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking about this when I was driving over today, that I think one of the things that might be the most fun about Thanksgiving is essentially everything stays the same, yeah. right? So we're all eating the same meal yeah. and have done for a very long time.
Yeah.
But within that, there's so many subtle nuances and differences that things kind of change every year. Mm-hmm. Is that the same with wine? I mean, the side dishes are traditionally the same, but they're a little different. Is it the same with wine every year?
I think so, actually, mm-hmm. because, you know, we have a lot of the same traditions, you know. I mean, we have to have this dish. We have turkey, we have the fixings, and we have the pies and all that fun stuff, you know, the hams. So a lot of the flavors are very similar. So I think it mirrors that in wine because we have the same wine. For me, we always have to have specific wines, you know. Have to have a champagne, you have to have a Chardonnay, and you have to have a Pinot Noir. But the opportunity there is to find something new and exciting and to see something that you've never had before or maybe even outdo the year prior, you know. Sometimes you have some new friends that come aboard or maybe, like for me this year, you know, this is the first year that I'm actually not hosting Thanksgiving for the past dozen or so years. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually going to my sister's home where they're cooking most of the meal. I'm bringing some things as well, but I'm mainly just tasked to bring the wine, mm-hmm. which is really fun too. So, you know, but that opportunity to do something even more special than last year, I think is really fun.
Yeah, it is kind mm-hmm. of a one-upping of your own ability. I think mm-hmm. that's the sort of fun part of it.
Yeah.
Bobby always likes to tell this story to people that one Thanksgiving I cooked dinner and I wasn't especially happy with the turkey. And so I cooked the entire dinner again on the Saturday.
Wow.
But it was kind of fun for me. Uh-huh. Like, no one else could understand it. But yeah. for me, it was really fun because yeah. I just wanted to get it right.
Right.
The second time.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I mean, for me, I mean, you know, you get not so used to it, but you know that you're going to have these specific grape varietals because the flavor profiles are very, very similar. But turning people on to something new that they've never tried before or something that just came out that year, or maybe it's a vintage-specific item that is so special because it's such a great year for that area in Burgundy or Beaujolais or even Champagne, it creates something special and memorable, which is obviously the things that we love to do and right. the things that we take with us, you know, as we move forward.
So let's go from a novice Thanksgiving, mm. right? So for the people listening who are really just enjoying Thanksgiving, maybe making it for the first time or maybe going to a friend's house and really want to make a good impression and, mm-hmm. and have fun with their friends. Basic Thanksgiving 101, what are we bringing? What are we drinking?
I'm always going to have a red wine because mm-hmm. most people in Hawaii actually drink red wine. A lot of people think that because we're a humid climate and we have a lot of seafood, most of our mainland families, they think that coming to Hawaii, we have to drink a lot of white wine. But in fact, Hawaii market, the wine market is actually dominated by red wines. So we have to have a Pinot Noir. So if you're thinking of bringing a bottle of wine to a Thanksgiving dinner, it has to be red and it has to be Pinot Noir because that is the best wine to go along with the Thanksgiving turkey, that cranberry dressing, and the gravy. That is the best pair for a red wine for Thanksgiving, bar none.
Unfortunately for us, it's also like our favorite wine in the entire world. So it's a really great holiday if you also happen to love Pinot Noir.
Oh, yeah.
But it really is, even at a beginner level, even at a sort of budget level Pinot Noir, mm-hmm. you have something in front of you that's able to hit all of those flavors, right? Mm-hmm. Sweet and salty and greasy, mm-hmm. little fatty, mm-hmm. all of those things at once.
Yeah, that's the beauty about Pinot Noir. Pinot Noir is the most versatile red wine on the planet. And it can go with things from seafood, you know, lighter things, white meats like chicken and pork, which is a wonderful pair. And then it can go to the red meats, you know, it can go to lamb, it can even go with veal and things like that. So it's the most versatile red wine. So, and it hits all the highs and lows. And these days you can find some really, really great wines at virtually every price point, you know, some really great values on the low end. And of course you can just climb the ladder to something super special that, you know, you and your friends and family will never forget.
So we're going to do all of them. We're going to recommend things at every price point. So budget-ish price point, we mm-hmm. don't want to be in sticker shock. Mm-hmm. What's a really reliable Pinot Noir where you really feel like you're getting the essence of the grape?
You know, so for Pinot Noir, for me, you know, California Pinot Noir is awesome, and there's a lot of really good California Pinot Noirs. But right now, some of the best values that I've been finding are actually coming out of Oregon. Mm-hmm. And Oregon is really a hotbed for Pinot Noir production. In fact, the one that's you know, that comes to mind first is actually a wine called Elowon mm-hmm. Pinot Noir, and that Pinot Noir is made in Oregon. It's a blend of different grapes from Rogue Valley, from Willamette Valley, and a little bit further down south in Oregon. But it has this just wonderful plumpness, richness, this wonderful silky character to it. It's not terribly expensive, about $22 to $23. I think it maxes out about $25 a bottle, and it's really, really nice. And it has this, the wine itself is actually made by the same gentleman that makes the Pinot Noir, or made the wine called Meiomi Pinot Noir, mm-hmm. Joseph Wagner. Mm-hmm. So he's used that same kind of character and that same kind of flavor profile, but he's using from making it from Oregon grapes, which is really, really nice. And that's one that, for as a beginner, that's a really great Pinot Noir to start off with.
And that's Elowon, as you would imagine, Elowon.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. That's our starter recommendation for your Pinot Noir for Thanksgiving.
Yep.
Elowon Pinot Noir, and you can find it in all of the usual suspects. Stores. Although, when it gets closer to the holidays, I would sometimes call them first, because either they can sell out, which happens quite often when we talk about a wine on the radio, or they don't have it yet, mm-hmm. and it can be kind of frustrating driving around. So call your favorite winemaker, wine cellar before you go and check them out. Okay, so how about then sort of next level, like mm-hmm. sort of $25 and up, mm-hmm. Where Thanksgiving is that kind of holiday. I mean, you're prepared to go out. You want to spend, especially if you're going to someone's house, you want to bring something mm-hmm. that you feel like you've discovered.
Yes.
And one of the things I think people have grown to love about your recommendations over the years, Roberto, is that you are able to introduce us to wines that drink a lot higher value mm-hmm. than you pay. Mm-hmm. And I know for a fact that over the holidays, I have more people telling me that they love buying the $25 to $35 Pinots mm-hmm. that you recommend because they drink like something much more expensive. Do you mm-hmm. have any of those hidden away this year that you can share?
Absolutely. So, you know, in my quest for really great Pinot Noirs, I come across quite a few of them, you know, from Santa Rita Hills up to Oregon, of course. But one of the ones that I found recently that I really enjoyed is actually, again, from Oregon, you know, and it's one called Penner Ash, and mm-hmm. it's made by Lynn Penner Ash, and she's really one of the pioneer of Pinot in Willamette Valley. Mm-hmm. And she makes an estate Pinot Noir that is absolutely amazing. In fact, for the money, it's the quality level is double the price. It's, you know, retail price is probably about $35 a bottle, but it tastes more like a $60 to $70 bottle of wine. It's as good as many of the top flight Pinot Noirs in California. Mm-hmm. But it's made 100% from the estate, and it's from vineyard sites which are all along the Willamette Valley. She's in the Isle Amity Hill area, and that winery there, you know, she still makes the wine, you know, very, very handcrafted. And as a woman, her touch is very, very feminine. So the wine is super sexy. It is silky. It has this wonderful creaminess, mm-hmm. but it also has this wonderful intensity, which is, I kind of liken it to the flavors on a wine when it first hits your palate, there's this wonderful attack, that introductory flavor to it, which is wonderful in this wine. But not only does it have that wonderful punch to it, it also has this wonderful seamless mid-palate fruit flavor and this wonderfully long and intense super finish, which I really, really enjoy in that wine. And it's just, every time I try it, I have to ask myself, how come, you know, I didn't get another bottle of that wine? Because it's just, every time I just go back to it and go, wow, man, that bottle of wine was really, really good. I should get another bottle of that, you know?
It does have that kind of moreness quality. Yeah. I had it, coincidentally, I was drinking it just the other evening at Morimoto in Waikiki.
Oh, awesome.
Where, yeah. We enjoyed a bottle of it, and I had the same feeling. Mm-hmm. I just thought that wine is so beautiful. Mm-hmm. Now, Lynn Penarache has been making Pinot Noir for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, since the mid-90s, mm-hmm. for
yep.
sure.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of those pioneers of, mm-hmm. especially using Oregon grapes.
Yeah.
She really, really knows what she's doing when it comes to Pinot Noir.
She's totally dialed it in. I mean, her wines are still getting wonderful critical reviews, and it's really... when I'm thinking about that Pinot Noir right now, I kind of want to go out and get one right now.
Well, the reason I came to you was I thought we might have some. Yeah. No, just kidding. If you're just joining us, we're chatting about wines, specifically wines for the Thanksgiving holiday with Roberto Viernes. So Pinot Noir, basic, Pinot Noir at the next level, mm-hmm. and drinking to just a fantastic level.
Mm-hmm.
Champagne, though, and a Chardonnay mm-hmm. are also pretty much integral part of the meal. If you want to mm-hmm. do it right and start mm-hmm. with your, you know, greeting your guests. And I know that for you, champagne is just the big deal.
I know,
right?
Yeah.
It can't be a holiday without it.
I always have to start with a bottle of champagne.
Right.
Always, yes. And it's for me... you know, it's a bit of a ritual, like so many things. But you know, just starting off with some bubbles, it's so it's refreshing. It's nice and cold. It gets your palate flowing. You know, there's no other beverage that is more associated with celebration and happiness and remembrance than champagne. You know, and so when I start with that, it just cleanses your palate too. You know, whatever you've been doing, if you've been working hard on the grill, or if you've been slaving away in the kitchen, you know, on the hot stove, or smashing potatoes or yams, or whatever you're doing, you know, that first taste of that champagne is so cleansing and so vibrant. It just kind of refreshes you. A fellow master sommelier of mine always told me that a glass of champagne is the ultimate attitude adjuster.
I agree.
Yeah. So
there's no moment that you can be drinking a glass of champagne that you don't feel like smiling.
Yeah, it just lifts you. I mean, of course, you know, people talk about it as the bubbles, but I think it's more than that. It's the flavor. It's the idea that you are now about to celebrate something.
Right.
And that you are now going to put away your other thoughts and your, you know, whatever happened before this, and now you're going to cleanse yourself with a beautiful glass of champagne. So for me, it's a must.
So for a lot of people, the champagne, buying the champagne is terrifying because they have in their mind that champagne's super expensive and, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
That's not exactly the case. You can mm-hmm. buy entry-level champagne
mm-hmm.
that is really quite good, mm-hmm. but not at all frightening in price. And I know mm-hmm. that you're going to suggest one of those to us,
mm-hmm.
but don't worry, I'm also going to ask you about your very favorites because it is the holidays and we do want to drink up. How about someone, you know, for the just kind of, again, novice drinkers going in, mm-hmm. trying to build up their palate,
mm-hmm.
what should they be going for to really understand what a good champagne is about?
So good champagne is always elegant. It's refreshing. The bubbles should be very... very refined and not the big, you know, the French call them frog eyes,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, l'œil de grenouille. And it's, you know, it shouldn't be bubbly. It shouldn't be as fizzy as like a Coca-Cola or even a beer,
mm-hmm.
sudsy or anything like that. That small pearl is a really good indicator about how long that champagne has been on the lees and it's aged. And in many ways, of the quality of the champagne as well. So looking for something in that level. And I would say that there are some champagnes that are really, really inexpensive, which aren't necessarily that good.
Yes, I agree.
Like anything else, you know, I mean, you do have to spend a little bit to get some good quality, but you don't have to overspend at the same time. So the one champagne that I've been drinking a lot of lately is the Onrio Brut Souverain Champagne.
Mm-hmm.
So Onrio is, it smells, it it's spelled like Henriot, so mm-hmm. like H-E-N-R-I-O-T. But their Brut Souverain champagne is as good as it's ever been. And it is just wonderfully elegant. It is luxurious. It has that wonderful crispness to it, wonderful complexity to it as well. And in our market, it's probably around, you know, maybe just under $40 a bottle for a really great top-notch bottle of champagne. You know, the Champagne House has been in existence since the early 1800s, so they've had a long time to perfect it, and they have some of the best vineyard sourcing for any of the champagne houses, and that Henriot Brut Souverain champagne is a real easy winner, in my opinion.
Henriot, yeah. Remember that yeah. name. Yeah. Widely available?
Yeah, it's definitely available in the fine wine stores. Maybe not so much in, you know, the supermarkets, sure. But definitely the fine wine stores will definitely have that.
Okay. Mm. And Roberto is far too professional to say this, but I can say it because I'm not as professional as him. But there are some hideous champagnes that are less than anything under, I think that you've probably found the find of the holidays at $40. Mm-hmm. Anything under that, and you're really risking drinking something that will not give you in any way a true picture mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. what champagne is. In fact, I don't know if you agree, but I'd much rather buy a bottle of Prosecco if my budget is less mm-hmm. than go and try and buy a cheaper bottle of champagne.
Oh, indeed. Yeah, there's a, you know, it's a little bit of a, you know, industry, you know, the other side of the coin, so to speak. But, you know, there are a lot of champagne houses, or I shouldn't say a lot, but there are definitely some champagne houses that are basically trying to create the least expensive champagne just to satisfy a market that's looking for champagne at a certain price point. But they have to use, like, the second presses of wines or wines that the great champagne houses, they sell off in bulk
right.
because it's
they
not good enough
them.
For them. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's basically made with the leftovers of all the good stuff. And that's really not what you don't want. You definitely don't want that. That's going to put a little downer, could put a downer on your Thanksgiving celebration. I mean, you're only going to do this once a year.
Exactly.
And you want to do it right. So get something that's good. You know, certainly don't have to overspend, but definitely get something that's very nice and reputable, and you'll have a much better time. And it's a much better spend for you, you know, for your money, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And I yeah. think also, too, what it does is when you're drinking something cheap and nasty, which whenever I think of cheap wine that can never reach its sort of characteristic, I always think about champagne, because mm-hmm. there are so many people who just buy from big box stores or wherever they end up. And it's a horrible, it's not even a good imitation, really,
yeah.
of what you're supposed to be drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
Don't do that, you guys.
Yeah.
Don't go and buy, like, the cheap ones that say champagne. It's just not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about Prosecco in another conversation with Roberto. We're not going to do it right now, but that's a much better way to go. So a $40 Henriot champagne.
Mm-hmm.
Go look for that at your wine stores, and you will be absolutely thrilled with it. And then, of course, I can't, like, talk about Thanksgiving and not let you wax lyrical about, because I know you do have, like, your go-to celebratory champagnes
mm-hmm.
that are just wonderful.
Oh yeah.
So share.
So one of my favorites, I mean, I'm a huge Blanc de Blanc fan, and for champagne drinkers, Blanc de Blanc is a champagne that's made only with Chardonnay grapes, because champagne is actually a blend of Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay typically. But Blanc de Blanc champagnes, which means white from white in French, is only made with Chardonnay. And one of my favorite Chardonnay producers is a champagne called Salon Champagne, which is, you know, it's made for the 1% of the top 1%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this bottle of wine is, you know, retails for, you know, $800 to $900 mm-hmm. a bottle. So that's not
it's
what
not
I'm talking
our
about.
Everyday
it's not
everyday wine.
Definitely not. And certainly not within my budget most of the year. So, but they do have a sister house called Delamotte. Delamotte, actually, it's a two sister houses, Delamotte and Salon. And Delamotte Champagne also makes an absolutely beautiful Blanc de Blanc Champagne. They have two versions. They have one that is a non-vintage, which doesn't have the vintage date on it. And then if you're lucky enough to find it, they also have a vintage-dated one, which is absolutely amazing. So what happens at Salon and Delamotte is when Salon does not declare a vintage, most of that champagne actually goes into the Delamotte Blanc de Blanc.
Okay.
And so the Delamotte Blanc de Blanc is basically the baby version or the younger version of the Ceylon champagne, which is already like the best of the best. And that Delamotte is absolutely amazing. That Blanc de Blanc champagne is truly one of my favorites. You know, retail price for the vintage Blanc de Blanc from Delamotte is probably around $140, $150 a bottle. You know, slightly less than what you'd pay for a bottle of Dom Perignon. But much, in my opinion, you know, it has much more of that creaminess, much mm-hmm. more of that complexity, that minerality inside of it, as just an absolutely luxurious, luxurious experience. And then for the non-vintage Delamotte Blanc de Blanc, that wine, you know, on the retail shelf is probably about $70 to $75 a bottle, which is another really good value.
Yes.
Again, because it's that tiered level where you're not, if you don't get in the vintage wine, you're getting it into the non-vintage blend as well. And that Delamotte champagne is just one of my favorites. I was lucky enough to visit it last year, the champagne house, and it's just amazing. And their Blanc de Blanc is one of the best in the business, bar none. Simply amazing.
Okay, you guys go and look for Roberto's suggestions. And it really is lovely when you get into finding like the great houses that have, as you say, not their vintage, but something they're making exactly the same, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. It just doesn't quite get right to that top level.
Yeah, slightly different vineyard sites and the aging is slightly different, but the quality level in terms of the winemaking styles and the champagne house, it's the same winemaker, you know, and it really provides a really good value. And if people want to step up for a truly luxurious experience, that's really one of the champagnes to do it with.
Awesome.
For sure.
Do you have a favorite wine this year? Do you have something this year that when you look back as you're mm-hmm. sitting sipping Thanksgiving wines that you just think, boy, I'm so glad I discovered that this year. That was amazing.
Ah, a discovery. There are a couple, actually. One is actually, it's Italian wine, but it's a wine that it's on the expensive side, but it's a cult wine in Italy. And it comes from an area called the Marche, mm-hmm. and it's made with a grape called Montepulciano. Mm-hmm. But it's made at a winery called Oesi delle Curni, and it is super, super small. They only produce about 3,000 cases total.
Wow.
For the universe.
It's a tiny little
it's a
boutique.
Tiny little boutique winery. And they make this wine, it's from Montepulciano. And it's very unique because the vineyard site itself is not super old, but it's planted very, very high density. They harvest the grapes at optimum ripeness, which is quite ripe for them. They'll put it in a brand new oak barrel for a year. Then they will rack it and put it in another brand new oak barrel for a second year. So it's aged 2 years. So this wine has a lot of wood on it. Mm-hmm. But when you taste this wine, you don't necessarily taste the wood. It's this wonderful, you know, melange of just black fruit, blueberries. It's got this really, really velvety texture to it. It's almost, it has a lot of the same stylistic characters of Cabernet Sauvignon, but the flavor profile is very different. It's much more that reddish fruit and blue fruit to it rather than the black fruit that you get in Cabernet Sauvignon. But it's really, really unique. And it's not cheap either. It's about about $110 a bottle, you know, but it's an Italian wine that I remember, and if I ever see it on the, you know, on a wine list, you know, I'd really like to try that wine again.
Sure.
Because it's really unique.
And with such a tiny supply, I mean, 3,000 bottles is nothing for the whole world.
It is. I mean, and what's interesting too, when we had it, it was actually a red wine, but it was paired with an octopus dish. An Italian chef was doing an octopus dish, and he paired a red wine, Montepulciano, you know, with that dish, and I was amazed. And it was a kind of a, you know, you'd think that a wine with that much wood, that much tannin to it,
would completely overpower it
and just kill it and be very bitter and metallic, but it didn't. It was really wonderful with the potatoes and potato and octopus salad. It was very eye-opening. It was my first time trying something like that, and the wine itself was really impressive. So that's a wine that I think if people can find it,
if you can
remember the name of it, You know, that's definitely a wine, especially for red wine drinkers. That's a that is it's definitely a fine. It's pretty amazing wine.
We will, I think, have to start sending out little newsletters with our podcasts to give everybody the names and the links to them so they can go and order them.
Yeah.
So, Roberto, you've set us up nicely for Thanksgiving. We have a champagne. We have our different levels of Pinot Noir. Mm-hmm. One Chardonnay that's your go-to for the day? Yeah.
You know, I found a really good one this year, and I don't think I've mentioned it in the past, but it's made, it's wine called 304. It's made by Nyers Vineyards.
Okay.
So Nyers is a small boutique winery in the Napa Valley. It's owned by a gentleman by the name of Bruce and his wife, Barbara Nyers. The winemaker is Tadeo Borchardt, and they make a wine called 304. And this is a Chardonnay. And they call it 304 because 304 is actually the name of the tensile strength of the stainless steel that they use in their stainless steel vats. And this wine actually is a wine that doesn't see any wood.
Mm.
But what's amazing about it is that it tastes like it does. It has this wonderful creaminess, this richness to it. It's not like Chablis at all, where it's very, very minerally and high acid. This is still a lovely, rambunctious, tropically fruited California Chardonnay, but it doesn't have that super strong vanilla flavor to it, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
But it has that vanilla texture to
it. The kind of mouth feel.
Yes,
and
that
the
wonderful
roundness.
Glycerol, yeah, roundness and creaminess. It kind of has this kind of like heavy whipping cream kind of richness to it, which is really interesting. And I asked him, you know, how do you get that kind of flavor when it's only in stainless steel? There's no wood to this wine. And, you know, they do a little lee stirring inside of it. And on top of that, they do pick their grapes, you know, on the riper side. So it's, you know, to ripe to slightly overripe. And it comes out in the wine with just this wonderful texture to it. But that Nyers 304 Chardonnay was really, really eye-opening. And I hesitate to say it, but I think there is this slight vanilla character to it. Even if the wine doesn't have any wood aging to it, there's something that happens in their winemaking process that gives it this almost vanilla edge and vanilla kind of creaminess to it, which is really amazing, which is why I recommend it, because it, you know, you have to have some of that creaminess inside of it. You know, having some of that woody kind of character to it is important, I think, in a lot of the flavors on the Thanksgiving table with all the smoked things here, you know. So I think that's really a wonderful Chardonnay. Yeah.
304.
Yeah, 304
for
Chardonnay.
Once we have a name that's easy to remember as well.
Yep,
very nice of Bruce Nyers to go along and do that for
us. For sure.
And isn't that one of the lovely things about wine? And I have to say, single malts too, is that sometimes there's just this magical thing that you pour out of the bottle, and it has all of these flavors that you cannot trace back to just terroir. There's so many other influences that you have to just sit back and sip and go, where does this come from? And it is kind of magical.
It is, yeah. That's why I love wine. I mean, there's so many other things inside of it that, other than just the fruit and you know, wood. There's so many other essences inside of it.
One of the other things I love about Thanksgiving is that it leads us nicely up to Christmas and New Year, and then tons more wine and tons more champagne to talk about. So we will look forward to catching up with you again before the holiday madness starts. But for now, thank you so much, Roberto. It's
my
always
pleasure, Jo. Thank
such
you.
A pleasure to talk to you, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you. Same to you.
You're listening to Radio Mojo. For more information on Radio Mojo, go to mojomcgarry.com.